gave her $10 and took her over to Granny's Attic, which is, you know, a secondhand store, and, you know, it's for the community. And she had more fun doing that, you know, spending her $10 and seeing, you know, seeing what a cache of stuff she could get for it. It was really pretty cool. So,
you know, my daughter, when she was very young, like 5 years old, she didn't want me to go to the cash register with her. And so I would give her the money and then I would go hide and watch. And the cashier would always be freaked out that there's this little girl by herself in the store. And Amberlee would, you know, say, okay, you know, make sure they don't know that you're with me.
Yeah.
And that was her thing to do. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you'll have to get out to the island again at least sometime this next summer and see the troll. They'd probably love that.
Yeah, Lucas is really high on the troll too.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he's seen it or not. Lucas
has sent me pictures of it.
Okay, so he must have gone out there with Barbara then sometime. Yeah, but it's pretty amazing, and there's there's one in Lincoln Park, too, and there's, I think, one on Bainbridge or something. There's several of them around, so.
Yep, the Fremont Troll.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah, that was kind of the original one. But, so let's do this. This next one, let's do that. We can talk a little bit more about where things are going. I'd like to talk a little bit about that Mediterranean diet a little bit more. Also, and then we can close her up.
Okay, you're looking at 30 minutes again?
Yeah, I think so.
Sounds good.
28.
Okay, we'll have the moment of silence here. And
a moment of silence, yes.
Yeah.
Drive a Chevy 'cause he drove Chevys. Like him, I'm a baseball fan. I'm going back to see him while he still knows who I am.
Welcome. This is Dr. Steve Nurse, and this is our next series of Is Abled, and it's a series on dementia and Alzheimer's. And what we would like to do here is let you know what you need to know about dementia and Alzheimer's disease. The series is 6 episodes. And we will discuss both dementia and Alzheimer's disease. The main person interviewed is Brad Tyson. Dr. Brad Tyson has been a clinical neuropsychologist since 2014 and specializes in cognitive assessment. He has clinical and research interests in dementia, traumatic brain injury, Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis, epilepsy, substance abuse, chronic pain, and general medical disorders associated with cognitive impairment. He was trained in neuropsychology and neuroimaging research at Dartmouth Medical Center in New Hampshire. He currently works for the Eastside Neuroscience Institute at Evergreen and Overlake Medical Centers. Hello, this is Dr. Steve Nurse, and gosh, I hear, Brad, I hear your introduction there, and I'm kind of in awe of just how smart you are. but it really has been interesting to discuss these things and to see where we're going in the area of dementia and studying these things. I don't want to get too political about it, but I'd sure rather put the money into medical research than cluster bombs. But okay, that's it. That's it for me. That's my political statement. But, you know, I do want to talk a little bit, Brad, about the Mediterranean diet, because one of the issues that I was working on when I was studying special education and different kinds of diseases, one of the conditions we discussed was multiple sclerosis. And there seemed to be pockets of areas where people have a much higher percentage of multiple sclerosis. And unfortunately, one of the largest areas where that occurs is actually in Eastern Washington. And they say maybe it's because people are closed in the wintertime and it's cold, but it's also one of the highest areas, or the areas where they eat the highest percentage of red beef. On the other hand, until the 1950s in Japan, multiple sclerosis was virtually unheard of. And only after in Japan they started eating more red beef and Wagyu beef and all those kinds of things, and more processed foods, Nissan noodles and things like that, that they started getting multiple sclerosis in Japan. And you think that that Mediterranean diet might also, well, not a cure, but might help persons slow down or whatever, dementia and Alzheimer's. Is that correct?
Well, so multiple sclerosis is a very complex disorder. You know, there may be some dietary contributions, but that's not the main sort of factors involved. So it's an interesting disorder in that it tends to be more common the further you get away from the equator. So, and it's predominantly or most highly represented in people of Northern European descent. So, and women are affected much more than men are.
Right.
So
right.
I mean, there's a genetic, you know, contribution, there's an environmental contribution, and we haven't worked out all of the, you know, contributing factors and sort of why somebody gets MS in the first place.
A lot of theories.
And that's, you know, there's a tendency to generate lots of theories the more, you know, ignorant you are of the topic, you know.
Yes.
So you know, like there's you know, you could find a million books on consciousness, for example. Mm-hmm. It's because we really know what consciousness is or how it arises, but that doesn't mean there's no shortage of theories.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, there's been some diets that have been proposed for MS. I don't think that any of them have shown any really great support in the research literature, but what the Mediterranean diet has shown support for is really reducing dementia risk, particularly Alzheimer's risk. And there's a couple other diets that have been, you know, proposed as being good for the brain. One that has quite a bit of support for it outside of the Mediterranean diet is called the DASH diet. So dietary approaches to stop hypertension. It's a little bit more flexible than the Mediterranean diet. But I mean, you know, nutrition is a very, very important thing, you know, in terms of brain health. And so you're right to say that processed foods and high sugar, you know, meals or diet is detrimental to the brain. We don't know all the ins and outs of that, but we do know that people who have a high sugar diet, who eat a lot of processed foods, do have a higher risk for certain neurologic disorders.
And you know, it's hard to say. I guess that's the other thing about research. It's really hard to say what works and what doesn't. You know, in the Mediterranean diet, we talk about a lot of fish, and then you say, have people say, well, wait a minute, there's a lot of we're finding a lot of mercury in fish now, and we're finding small plastic particles and everything else. And, you know, we kind of get into that theory about the, you know, what the tobacco industry said, you know, for years and years. Well, look at the Marlboro man. He's, you know, 95 and smokes, you know, four packs a day.
Died of emphysema, I believe.
What's that?
I think the Marlboro man died of emphysema.
Yes, he did. Yeah. And, but we kind of avoid those things, you know, like we were saying earlier, we want to, you know, we bring up the things that prove what we want to prove. And,
Well, you know, the problem with this research is that there's just so many variables involved, and it's very, very difficult to control for all of those variables. So like we talked about last episode, right? So there's this idea that maybe alcohol helps, you know, reduce dementia risk. Well, you need money to drink alcohol. And if you're drinking, you know, wine every night, you need some money. So did we control for the effects of socioeconomic status, for example? I mean, that's just one small example of
sure
how difficult it is to sort of conduct this research.
Right. Or
it's impossible to control for all the variables, particularly when you don't know what all the variables might be.
Or like you say, environmental. If you happen to live in a community that's next to a toxic waste dump, you know, you're probably in more dire straits there. And so I did hear something, and maybe you've heard about this, about using it was supposedly used with Parkinson's, and it's supposed to be very non-invasive, and they use sound waves and it's some people, you know, of course, maybe it's the placebo effect. Have you heard of anything like that?
You know, I've heard of, it's a sort of broader category, if I'm, you know, understanding what you're talking about,
yeah,
of stimulation therapies. So light therapies, sound therapies, music therapies, right? Mm-hmm. These have been suggested in Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia, to sort of stimulate the individual and maybe have some cognitive benefit, but these cognitive benefits are modest at best.
Mm-hmm.
As part of a multidisciplinary treatment, you know, maybe they provide a little bit of help, but certainly in isolation, it's not going to reverse anything.
Yeah. And again, you know, I don't want to keep going back to this, but again, it's those variables. You know, maybe if a person is in such a study where they're doing something like that, they're also getting advice on nutrition and they're also getting advice on exercise.
They're getting attention.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They're getting attention. Yeah, yeah. We know in for instance, in the educational field, in my area, that mm-hmm. if we pay more attention to one kid and working with one kid individually, mm-hmm. and have time to do that, the child is going to progress much better. We know even with kids with Down syndrome that if we work with them intensively, we can now get them almost to stay up with their class until about fourth, fifth grade. And then no matter what you do, you know, it kind of tails off after that. So, yeah, I'm sure the attention does make a big difference. Explain.
Well, let me interject one thing about Down syndromes that's kind of related to this, is that individuals with Down syndrome have a very high risk of Alzheimer's disease, and they develop it early in life, usually in their maybe 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
So, and it has to do with a common gene that's involved in Alzheimer's disease.
That's interesting, because isn't it I have several friends that had brothers and sisters that had had Down syndrome, and by the time that they were in their 50s, they were in nursing homes in receiving, you know, care for that. Now we call it memory care, don't we? Isn't that what we call it in the in the nursing homes, and it's pretty expensive.
It is, yeah, very.
What do you think? Do you think that there is with just with age? Is it? Well, they say that men don't necessarily die of prostate cancer, but when they die, they all have prostate cancer.
You don't die with prostate cancer. You don't die of prostate cancer. You die with it. That's said about Parkinson's disease as well.
Is that right? And is that the same way with dementia?
No. I mean, the dementia contributes to the decline in the mortality. Yeah, I mean, you die of complications due to dementia.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And
in most cases, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. You think right now where we're going with the research is trying to become more personalized on our treatment or our how we respond to the dementia. And is that correct?
Well, the research is really moving towards biomarkers, and these are, you know, like advanced imaging techniques. You know, hopefully we get, you know, a blood test or a saliva test, but we're currently using things like spinal fluid. And these biomarkers, the point of this is to identify this as young as possible. Because again, the younger you are when you're identified with cognitive decline that might turn into dementia, the better the interventions tend to be. And the more aggressive we can be with applying those interventions. And a lot of those interventions at this time are just lifestyle and behavior changes. These are really the best treatments that we have for dementia. You know, for example, aerobic exercise is probably the only thing that has been shown in research to slow the progression of Parkinson's disease. No medication we can give you can slow the progression of Parkinson's. But if you exercise frequently, and the more the better, you can, you know, limit cognitive decline, you can limit physical decline associated with Parkinson's.
So like water aerobics, yoga, anything that gets that blood moving in your system is good.
What the recommendation is, and this is just because this is what a lot of the studies have used as their sort of, you know, metric, but 150 minutes of moderate intensity exercise per week. So that's 30 minutes, five days a week.
Wow.
And moderate intensity exercise, you know, I would describe this as you're a little bit short of breath. So you could have a conversation with somebody, but you wouldn't want to because it would be a little bit laborious. So, I recommend anybody who comes into my office to exercise more.
Yeah.
And there seems to be, you know, while that is the sort of guideline that has been suggested in the research, it suggests that there's a dose dependent relationship. So the more the better, and even a little is good.
I can get my heart rate up just by going down to the club down here in their corner, watching all the young people sweat, you know, and drinking coffee and doing that, watching everybody on the treadmill thing. Whew.
They've shown research in elderly folks with Alzheimer's disease who are more active doing chores around the house, have a much, you know, sort of more longevity, better benefits than somebody who's more sedentary.
That explains why do all the vacuuming. I am like a little snowplow around the house with my my battery powered vacuum cleaner and clean up all the dog fur from Maya. So that's good. So where do you think? Well, I mean, I know this is a totally speculative question, but where do you think we'll be in 10 years with this? You think we'll have made great strides, or do you think we'll be kind of in the same place?
I think we will have made great strides by then, right? So we're really on the verge here of treating and slowing and possibly reversing many different types of dementia. So, for example, I mentioned last episode a drug called Aricept, which
Right.
is prescribed in Alzheimer's disease. Well, that medication was FDA approved in 1996. So, for 25 years, we've had nothing new for Alzheimer's. And then in 2021, there was a new medication that was approved. It's an anti-amyloid monoclonal antibody. And what this drug does is it actually removes the amyloid plaque from the brain. And we're in our third or fourth iteration of this drug now. So no drugs for 25 years for Alzheimer's disease. And then in the past 3 years, we have three or four new ones. So
Well,
these drugs don't work great yet, but with each new drug, we're getting a little bit better of an effect. And what this drug does is as I said, it removes the amyloid plaque from the brain. And the earlier we are able to do this, the better the outcomes we seem to get. So amyloid is a plaque that builds up in the brains of individuals with Alzheimer's disease. And once there is sufficient buildup of this plaque, we think that the neurons are dying. So if you're young and you've been evaluated, and this is why it's so important to get evaluated when you first notice these problems, we can start these treatments and we'll see. I mean, these drugs are new, so we don't have really long-term, efficacy data on them yet. But what hopefully is going to occur is that we will limit the buildup of this amyloid plaque and we will save a lot of neurons in the process. And hopefully, be able to really extend the cognitive life of individuals who develop this disease.
and it would be interesting too. We talked a little bit about stem cell kind of replacement, or if you could reduce the amyloids and then do something with stem cell to regenerate some of the portions of the brain, that might be some kind of a combination. I mean,
Yeah.
What do you think about stem cell replacement?
Well, I think that it is the avenue that's going to cure Parkinson's disease. I mean, I think the way that the research is shaping up, that we cure Parkinson's disease inside 10 years.
Wow.
I really think that's true. Or at least we have some significant advance that really, cripples the disease and really improves the quality of life for the individual. I think that's within 10 years. And I think
Wow.
we have a similar thing for Alzheimer's disease, although the Alzheimer's treatments haven't looked as promising. We're getting closer with Alzheimer's disease. So,
We know that a pretty large percentage of the population will eventually, at least right now, will eventually have some Alzheimer's or dementia. I'm kind of surprised that there aren't more drugs out there available, because it seems to be that if you could find a drug that could really do something, that had a great efficacy, be a big money maker, that's for sure.
Well, and these new drugs are big money makers. So they're quite expensive. I think it's something like $30,000 a year for these new Alzheimer's drugs. And I don't know how much of that is being covered yet. But the point is that we've been working on this for a long time, and it's so certainly not for lack of effort, at least for Alzheimer's
Okay.
disease. And there are some concerns here that if these new round of drugs don't really work effectively, then we've been working on a false assumption that amyloid plaque is what causes the cognitive decline. So it's very difficult to understand the brain because of its complexity. So we know that we're doing one thing to remove the pathology of Alzheimer's disease. What we don't yet know is how effective that's going to be in the long term for the cognitive health of these people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is an extremely common problem. People are living longer than ever before, and Alzheimer's, you know, comes on, you know, an average age of 75, and by the time people are 85, 40% have it. So, I mean, it's an incredibly common problem for which we've, you know, really put a lot of time and effort and resources into solving. And we're getting closer. But we have, at least for Alzheimer's, a little bit to go. I mean, the ultimate thing is that, you know, we could take a blood test or just a saliva test, and we could identify a dementia and then treat it right away, or maybe even a vaccine. Right? I mean, these are sort of the holy grails of
right.
sort of research.
And again, that's where I think that, we talked a little bit about AI and how that might affect, because I know with, how long did it take for us to really develop, drugs for polio at the same time. Look at COVID. We really developed a vaccine or, in a relatively short period of time. Mm-hmm. Maybe Edison had, how many light bulbs that didn't work. So even our failures are, you at least cut narrow the path of what we're looking for in the way of research. And hopefully we can, that can help too. I think also,
Still at this time, I mean, while we continue to wait for these therapeutics to, evolve and become available, really, the best thing you can do at this point is prevention. And prevention comes through primarily behavior and lifestyle modifications. Like we've talked about diet, we've talked about exercise and the importance of those things, but also things like staying cognitively active, continue to learn as much as possible, participate in hobbies and social activities, get good sleep, avoid alcohol and drugs, have a strong social support network. We know that all of these things are preventative, and when used in combination with one another, right, the more benefit and the more sort of dementia reduction we can possibly get.
Yeah.
So that's what I would sort of advise of your listeners at this point.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe we'll find...
Really with the lifestyle and behavior modifications.
Maybe we'll find that in the next 5 years that the direct nexus between Alzheimer's and playing pickleball will be our big savior there. But it certainly is... interesting to see all these, all these things, and hopefully they're changing, and hopefully we can get some drugs. I think the other thing is that I really want to mention that the person that has Alzheimer's or dementia is certainly affected, is the major person who is affected. But boy, the one thing that I have seen is how... it's with all my studies that I did with the Vietnam veterans, you have one person that was killed in Vietnam and it affects 20 other people out there. And I think the same thing is true with Alzheimer's and dementia. The family members that it hurts, I guess what I would almost call collateral damage. Do you see that in your studies and in, working with your group?
Care partner stress is a big issue, and how much your care partner is affected, right, directly impacts the care for the individual. So if somebody has a lot of burnout, a lot of stress, it's going to affect, the person that they're caring for and affect their disease. And So, you know, it's a really delicate balance there. And what I would say to loved ones of individuals with dementia is to get support. And there's a lot of different, you know, there's support groups, there's resources. I'd refer your listeners to the Alzheimer's Association of Washington. You can get online and find that. If you have any loved ones who have men with Parkinson's disease, I run a support group for men with Parkinson's disease. And you can email me at bradggtyson@gmail.com.
And Brad, we'll
To get...
even put some of that. We can put that on
Perfect.
our page here when we run this series and
Yeah.
get that out to people. I think that's really important.
Yeah, and there's lots of care partner support groups. We have, you know, care partner support groups through our institution, through the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation. So, I mean, there's a lot of resources. The important thing is that people interact with those resources
Yes.
and are aware that they're out there.
Yes, I think that's, yeah, that's, you know, that's the kicker. And having people talk these things up and discuss them, and just becoming more involved in the whole process. Not to mention names, there was a person we were going to be d talking with today, who is a caregiver, and as we got closer to the time to do our interview, it as Rick said, it just kind of puts salt in the wound. It kind of brings up things, and you know, it just a great deal of stress on those that watch a person in decline. So.
Yeah. And, you know, also enlisting the support of other family and friends, really, really important. It's really hard to take this on by yourself. So having support, having, you know, times where you can be, you know, alone and, you know, in a relaxing environment, that needs to happen frequently. And to sort of limit the, you know, accumulation of stress, which has a detrimental effect, like I said, on not only the care partner, but the individual being cared for.
One last question here. I know we're just about out of time, but I go in for my wellness, I think, in my annual blood test, usually in June, and I don't feel like I'm having any signs of dementia at this point. But is that something I should that when I go in, just personally ask my personal care physician? Is it something that he sees, or does he think that I should be evaluated? He or she think I should be evaluated? Is that?
Not necessarily something you see, Steve, right? So I, you know, I have people in my office all the time who can have a very intelligent conversation, but when you start testing them, they show pretty severe impairment. So that's why it's important for everybody to get tested, even if you don't have any cognitive problems. And importantly, I think I'd piggyback on that is to say that most people who have dementia, particularly people who have memory loss, aren't aware that they have it. So, you know, the same cognitive, you know, difficulties that are contributing to the dementia are contributing to the lack of insight. You know, you can't
Right.
remember what you can't remember.
Yeah, that's yeah, really good point. So I think with that, we will close, and really want to thank you, Brad, for the your time has been invaluable here, and I'll like to take you out to dinner for a nice big red steak and a big potato with some sour cream on. No, I'm just giving you a hard time. But we need to get together again soon. So take care and enjoy your day. Enjoy this wonderful Northwest weather. And we will talk to you soon, Brad.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure, Steve.
Okay. Talk to you later.
drive a Chevy 'cause he drove Chevys. Like him, I'm a baseball fan. I'm going back to see him while he still knows who I am.
This is Dr. Mama Steve Nurse, and I want to thank everybody for listening to our series on dementia and Alzheimer's disease on Voice of Vashon, the Dynamo of Washington. Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
While he still knows who I am. This time.